He's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Monday. It is the May 16th edition of the Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson of Gunderson Capital Management and Barry Kite, chartered financial analyst with Gunderson Capital Management. Well, we finished with the big bang in the market on Friday, and we're off to a weak start so far here today. And a couple of reasons, a couple of things I think we can point our finger at. We'll get to that in a bit. But right now the Dow's down 193. It's sitting right at 32,000, which seems to be that support level right now. The S&P is down 27, and it's sitting right at that support level of about 4,000. It's at 39.96 right now. The NASDAQ, which is definitely taking it on the chin much harder than the other indexes here in 2022, the NASDAQ's down 119. That's a 1% drop. And it's clear down to 11,685. Let's not forget, it was at 16,000 about a year ago. The Russell 2000 down 13 points. That's 0.75%. There is strength in the commodities again today, however. Crude oil up 23 cents to $110.72. Gold is down 20 cents to 1808. It looks like that 1800 level could be support for gold. Silver's at 21.37, up a little bit, 37 cents. The 10-year is down 6 basis points. That would reflect a bit of a flight to safety today. The 10-year is at 2.87, and Bitcoin continues to crumble. It's at 29,565. So welcome to today's Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson of Gunderson Capital Management and Barry Kite, chartered financial analyst who handled the show for me Friday, and I got a lot of compliments, Barry, and they said, Bill, why don't you just take an extended vacation and the rest of the summer off, you know?
Right? Hey, I saw at Goldman, their top-end partners, or they just allowed unlimited vacation. So
hey,
maybe that's where it may, maybe you fit in there.
I'm working for the wrong firm.
Look, I saw that today. I'm like, how does that, I want to know, how does that work? Right?
Well,
I mean, I assume you still got to get your job done at some point or you won't be at the firm.
Judging by their stock picks, they're on vacation a lot anyways. You know, I remember that Goldman Sachs Select Mutual Fund that we were all touted back in 2000. It was a stinker. That was the best of the best of all their analysts. I don't know if they're ranked. We ought to find one of their analysts and see where he's ranked on Tip Ranks. But, well, you know what? We work on vacation. I took a one day off Friday.
Yeah.
My wife and I went to Atlanta, and we watched our San Diego Padres win 2 out of 3. Versus the world champion Atlanta Braves.
Yeah, one of those was an extra innings game, right? So you had to get you had a little extra yelling over there.
Yes,
while you
I kind of lost my voice
there.
In Atlanta. I left my voice in Atlanta, my heart in San Francisco. But you know what? I got to see in Atlanta, they had it on display up close, like a jewelry case, okay? You know, at Tiffany's was the World Series trophy.
Nice, yeah.
It's never come close to San Diego. It flies right over us to Los Angeles and to San Francisco, and, you know, Phoenix has had it a few times. We've never had it. And that World Series ring, oh, my gosh, that thing was gorgeous. I took a picture of that, and Atlanta's a great baseball city. You know, the Braves, they go back to almost, you know, the 1873, something like that.
That was my only Southern team for years. I mean, we had to watch. We watched them on TBS, and they weren't great. Put it that way.
For the times,
but of course, then the '90s came along, and they were always in the mix.
Yeah, well, they had those pitchers, and the highlight of the trip was I got a Tommy Glavine bobblehead doll to bring home. So
there you go.
You know, grown men do still play with dolls, and mine is a Tommy, and he nods his head yes to everything. So I like that. All right, well, okay, what's going on? We had a huge day in the market on Friday, which was nice. And, you know, the market is really unpredictable right now. We'll have a 1,000-point down day. We'll have an 800-point up day. We'll have a 500-point down day. And, you know, trying to make sense of it is pretty difficult. And I've just played around all year with a mix of stocks, including inverse funds. I thought that the markets, the indexes would hold their support levels. I'm kind of right. I said 32,000 on the Dow. It is holding 32,000. I said 4,000 on the S&P. It is basically holding that. But the NASDAQ just continues to slip. And so I still have inverse funds. And we continue to be heavily weighted towards the commodity side of the ledger. We're off to a pretty good day here today, last time I looked. We are underweighted, although we still do own some of the big tech stocks. And getting that mix right and avoiding the high PE stocks, avoiding the bond fund, avoiding almost anything outside the U.S., and that's been our recipe here for 2022. Okay, so one of the things I see today is Goldman Sachs, the guys that are on vacation most of the time, they came home from vacation, lowered their target price on the S&P 500 to 4,300 for the year. Well, okay, keep in mind that the S&P is expected to make about $225 in earnings this year. So they're using a multiple somewhere in the 17 range, 18, and coming up with $4,300 for the target price by the end of the year. And I think that's about where I was when I did mine on Friday. But the one we're really focused on is the one for next year. You know, at $250 in earnings, if you stick a 20 multiple on that, you get a 5,000 target price. Well, I don't think the market's going to trade at a 20 multiple with the interest rate environment we're in right now. If you stick a 15 multiple on that, you get $37.50. Well, we're probably going to be somewhere between 15 and 20, somewhere in the 17 to 18, 16 to 18 range, let's call it. So, you know, most of the target prices from the people who really understand valuation are more in the 4,500 to 4,600 area. And there's still some lofty ones out there. In fact, the consensus target price is almost 5,200. That's just not going to happen. It's not going to happen. The multiple is not going to be 25 or 20 or 21. For next year. So anyways, that's where we sit right now. There's a lot of macro calls that we want to get to here today. Now, the other thing I addressed in the newsletter over the weekend, the market bottomed out in March of 2009 when the S&P got down to 660. And if you look at the trend line, if you connect that bottom back in March of 2009 with Friday's close, which was right around 4,000, you still don't see a break in that trend, okay? And from a technical point of view, the definition of a bull market is a primary uptrend. So the S&P has not broken that primary uptrend yet. And I gave a number over the weekend in the newsletter of where it would. And we would be then in a bear market from a technical point of view. The Dow has not broke the S&P 500 or the NASDAQ has not broke, but it is getting pretty close to doing that. And the NASDAQ is down 20% from its high, over 20% from its high. So technically, if you're going to go by the dictionary version, we are in a bear market in the NASDAQ. But that long-term trend has not broke yet, so we'll see. We've got a lot of recession predictions out there. In fact, Goldman Sachs said we go to 3,700 if there's a recession. And I think I said about the same exact thing on Friday before they put out their report today. This is the Best Stocks Now show. We'll be right back. Back here to the second quarter of today's Best Stocks Now show. Boy, the market's improved quite a bit since we started. We're surging on our end here at Gunderson Capital. The Dow's down 63, but I see that the S&P 500 has gone positive. No, it's down 7. It's the NASDAQ that has gone positive by a little bit. No, it's still down 26. Well, anyways, it's still a big improvement here. From where we started the day. What is it, Barry? Global growth worries? Is it the Empire State Index? What is it that's got the market nervous today?
Well, we've got, you know, certainly crude oil, you know, booing, you know, likely the S&P and the Dow. We are down, 10 years down below 2.9 at the moment, right? We're at, 2.87. I mean, just remember, we touched, three, I think I was covering it on Friday. We touched 315 just, a couple of weeks ago. that's quite a difference from where we've been. We did get, a piece of, Monday news at the old Empire State Manufacturing Index. You look at, signs of a slowdown, right? I mean, seems like a big miss. Previously, and what this really does is gauge, business optimism, right, in one of the biggest economic zones in the U.S. and in the world, in New York. And you've got, last month, a 24.6 number, right, for April. They forecasted a 16.5% number this month. And it came in at -11.6, which, when I look at the graph, looks like the last time we were this low was January 2016, with the exception of COVID. If we're in the forecasting business, right, that would be a pretty significant miss. But kind of a lot of what you're hearing just. Around the country, and just in terms of optimism, I mean, firms expressed less optimism about their 6-month outlook than they did did earlier this year. So, as we mentioned, not just with with consumers or with the investor sentiment surveys, but also right with certain business surveys, you've got just a lot of pessimism out there. And you can always make the argument sometimes that with a lot of pessimism, sometimes that ends up being, some of the, looking back sometimes ends up being some of the better entry points. It's always a little bit hard to pull the trigger. But, when you're looking at these things, it's a lot of these economic pieces are beginning to kind of stack up right in the favor of a bit of a slowing economy, which, could have the Fed moving slower. Right, going forward, I mean, I still think they're on certainly that 50 basis point stretch for the next couple of meetings. But how high do they get to? Right, that's gonna end up in the economic data. But We get some other interesting points later. You know, tomorrow we've got the retail sales, which to me are always very important, just because of the importance of the U.S. consumer, right, on the U.S., you know, on our markets, on the world markets, and on the world stage. And I know we had talked about when we were out on Friday, we got the we got the import price number. Import prices were flat. So, I mean, which means that, and that tells me at least we're importing some form of deflation, right? I don't know if we can import, you know, enough deflation, but we are importing some deflation because, of course, the dollar has been strong and is purchasing more goods, you know, from those overseas.
Well, as it pertains to retail sales, I saw no shortage of consumer not being quite aggressive there at the ballpark over the weekend. We had a packed house on Friday, a packed house on Saturday. And, I mean, they're standing in line. The lines for the concession stands, $18 hamburgers, $36 pork sandwich. They had a sandwich that had a whole rack of pork ribs on it. I don't know how you eat it. It was $36. And, you know, I noticed the people around me, the cup of beer seemed to be about 8 ounces or so. I mean, it's a tiny little cup of beer. And they're probably paying, you know, $10 for that. So, it, you know, the consumer seems to be doing just fine right now. I see they're going to gradually start reopening businesses in Shanghai. That's a surprise. That's the first crack that we've seen. Their cases are starting to drop, and so they're going to do a gradual reopening of businesses such as shopping malls and hair salons as the drop in case numbers continues there in China. Now, what I've been saying all along is that's going to put upwards, more upwards pressure on oil and gas prices, which I've seen no efforts whatsoever, only a few token efforts, to increase the production here in North America. It's not happening. So the production's going to remain about the same. We've got $110 per barrel oil now. Most of what we saw as, in our travels was around 425 to 440. Diesel is way up there. And, you know, there just doesn't seem to be any hope in sight for lower oil and gasoline prices. Okay, now you got another country that wants to join NATO. First it was Finland, who shares a long border with Russia. And Russia is rattling their saber at them. Now Sweden is pushing forward with NATO membership, so we'll see what that does to Mr. Putin and how he fires back. But that seems to be kind of a line he's drawn. He doesn't want any more countries joining NATO, and that was his biggest excuse for going into Ukraine. So we'll see how that all plays out. And that, I mentioned that because that's also playing into the higher oil prices and gas prices. Is playing into the food shortages, and I know they're trying to get that grain and get it distributed throughout the world. I don't know how that's going to happen, but there continues to be a lot of upwards pressure, inflationary pressures. Okay, we
and
do have a deal.
Wheat prices are soaring today.
Yeah. What is?
Wheat prices
oh,
are soaring.
Oh, let me look at
again.
That's my favorite chart to look at, wheat. W-E-A-T. Yep, there it goes. Now, get this. In the Best Stocks Now app, okay, I've got over 6,000 different things, ETFs, mutual funds, individual stocks, to rank. And wheat, the ETF wheat, I want to, well, it's definitely the number one ranked ETF, no doubt about it. And as far as the overall ranking, when I compare it to everything else out there, let me see where that's at. I've got wheat is number 10. It's ranked number 10 out of 6,000. Eat your Wheaties. We'll be right back. And welcome back here to the second half of today's Best Stocks Now show. Well, earnings season is over. And you know what? I'd give it probably a B+. It was pretty good earnings season. The vast majority of companies are up around 80%, beat their earnings estimates. Same with the revenue estimates. I would say the revenue reported were extremely good. And I didn't really see many companies guide lower, except for the few companies that really got clobbered and, you know, just aren't in a good space right now. Inflation, of the 500 companies that reported earnings, I think 80% of them mentioned inflation in their conference call. And, you know, you go back a few years, Barry, there was hardly anybody mentioning inflation. Like, you know, maybe 10% of the companies even mentioned the word inflation in their calls, really, for the last decade.
Yeah, and most of the Fed statements then actually wanted to figure out ways to hit their inflation targets. They were vastly under their kind of 2-3% range. I mean, it used to be a 3% number they were shooting for. They literally lowered it to 2 during the mid 2010s because they couldn't hit 3.
No,
I mean we were importing inflation. You had a lot of productivity from a technology standpoint, and so you know 2 kind of became the new 3. Right. And so it was certainly a completely different mantra beginning in the, you know, 2020s decade, I guess.
Okay, what's going on with Twitter today? It got up to 54.57 a month ago. Now it's clear down to 38.50. Give us a little update on Twitter there, Barry.
Yeah, and we had some news early Friday morning. Essentially, Elon was on the using Twitter again, right? Ironically, he tweeted out that the Twitter deal was temporarily on hold pending details supporting calculation that spam or fake accounts do indeed represent less than 5% of users. And so what he's referring to there is, okay, if a certain percentage of Twitter users, right, are essentially fake bots or, kind of computer-driven, not real accounts, right? And so Twitter kind of estimates in their samples, right, that they've done roughly somewhere under 5%, somewhere under 5%. Essentially, Elon's using this as a way to, potentially put a hold on the deal, do some more due diligence. Also, it could be a way to get that number down from 54.20 in terms of the price he's paying. If you look at a lot of the price targets for Twitter, right, prior to just the announcement of the Elon's owning more than. Owning 9, I think it was like about 9% of the shares. I mean, most price targets for Twitter were in the $30 range, right? And so he's obviously paying $54.20. One of the interesting pieces of the deal is he's using some Tesla stock, obviously, to cover some of his financing. So essentially, it's call it a margin loan. And so in the event the deal does go through, Twitter, I mean, Tesla folks are worried from the standpoint of, okay, buys the company, Twitter begins to falter, well, then you could potentially have some forced selling on the Tesla side of things because he's getting called on his mortgage, on his margin loan potentially. So there's a lot of back and forth. Bottom line is the stock, took a huge hit on Friday. It's down 5% this morning. It's at $38.60. And, I think it's a good example. And I've had a lot of, clients and listeners, ask, hey, should I buy Twitter? Right. Because it's trading at, whatever it's trading at, and it should be 54.20. Right. Number one is, that's kind of the old example of no free lunch, right? There's always, in any merger arbitrage, there's always risk that the deal doesn't go through for whatever reason. This is kind of, a classic example of kind of how this stuff plays out. I always go back to the old Wall Street movie, right? Of course, none of that played out in the movie, doesn't play out really in the public. This is, you know, this is very, very public. It seems probably more public than it needs to be. But anytime you see Twitter going down because of the deal might end, basically, Tesla's been, you know, kind of going in the opposite direction. And it's primarily for that margin reason.
Yeah, Tesla is down at last time I was 767. It's come down pretty hard during this whole all these negotiations taking place. Well, there is another deal. I don't know if it will happen or not. I've never flown on Spirit Airlines. I know they fly out of the Charleston airport quite a bit.
I think I've been on them one time, if I'm not mistaken.
Would you go back a second time? Was it okay?
I'm pretty easy. Like, if you get me to point A to point B, right, safely, right?
Yeah.
You know, I can kind of deal with all the other kind of stuff around there. Don't delay me and leave me in the airport for a day and a half or anything like that either. But, put it this way, it was fairly uneventful, so I guess I would fly them again, put it that way.
Yeah, I don't like those little airplanes where the guy's elbow, you know, is in my ribs and stuff like that, or in my Diet Coke. But anyway, Spirit Airlines, is getting now, hostile. JetBlue is getting hostile. So I would just say this, that that's a vibrant industry right now. A lot of times these mergers happen, and the other one that's happening today in a very vibrant industry, an industry we still like a lot, Diamondback Energy is buying Rattler Midstream. I like that. A couple of rattlesnakes getting together.
Good names, yeah.
Yeah, and Fang. Now, I've tweeted many times, I like this Fang better than the other Fang.
Right.
And a Diamondback is, they're going to make $24 per share this year. Diamondback is one of those examples of a relative strength of 97 and a P.E. ratio of 9. And the symbol is Fang. So if someone says, do you like Fang, the Fang stock? Say, yeah, I like Diamondback Energy. And Rattler, on the other hand, is up 17% today. I think there's going to continue to be deals. If there's a deal out there that can help them ramp up production, I think you're going to continue to see deals being made.
And my favorite part about the JetBlue hostile takeover was the hostile, you know, number, right, in terms of what they're going to pay per share, lower than the initial offer. So it's like, oh, you don't want to take this offer? All right, we're going to do a hostile bid and ask you to pay less.
Yeah, now take this.
Right.
Okay, so with earnings season now behind us, and, of course, I think everybody now will be looking ahead to the official GDP number. We got kind of the preliminary one, but they adjusted a couple of times after that. And that preliminary one was a negative number, which was quite shocking. Yeah, and if it ends up being a negative number, then that recession word, you get two in a row negative numbers on the GDP, and you're in a recession. Do you think that this one will end up being negative, and do you think there's any chance of us getting two in a row negative GDP numbers?
I do. I mean, and, you know, so we always get into that, is it, you know, officially, right, definition-wise, right, you know, two negative GDP numbers in a row is a recession, right, which, you know, is going to will be, you know, if that happens, you're going to hear, you know, a lot of mantra right out of the even more firepower out of the Republican camp for the midterms, inflation and negative GDP. But when you actually look at the numbers, I think the two I go to is number one, I think fixed investment was like around 7% increase or so, which, you know, just means what you would think it would mean. It means capacity, right? Companies are building more, working on factories, trying to increase capacity to meet some of these supply and demand issues that we've seen. So I think that's a positive. The other piece is our imports and exports. Our imports were way, we had a huge trade deficit this last time, partly probably because the dollar is purchasing more things. The other thing is, you know, we're bringing this stuff in to ramp up production, right, to meet some of these supply and demand issues. So it's, you know, it's one of these things that you could probably talk about, you know, two different ways, but it wouldn't surprise me if we get a second one in a row specifically because of that import-export differential. And the dollar remains, I mean, you know, it was at a high since 2002, just a few days ago. So,
well, the reason I mention that is because Goldman Sachs says we could go to 3,600 if we go into a recession. And, you know, I made a case for that in the newsletter over the weekend. A lot would have to happen, but that is the kind of the biggest bearish case scenario. Well, there's a lot of stocks jumping off the page here today. Look at them. I'm trying to catch them. They're all over my room here. I'll come back with the best ones in the final segment of the show. This is the Best Stocks Now Show. And welcome back here to the final segment of today's Best Stocks Now show. Well, I would say that today is just kind of more of the same of the major themes that we've seen here in 2022. It's a bad day for high tech once again. The higher the tech, the bigger the drop. You got ARK funds down 2.7% today. The bond funds have come back a little bit, but they still remain under pressure. You got a little bit of a flight to safety here into the bond market. That's driving interest rates down. That's helping the bond market. I did look at the yield curve on in Saturday's newsletter. It's actually improved a little bit. I'm not sure why. It could be some kind of this flight to safety could be impacting that a little bit, but we don't seem to be in any danger of the yield curve inverting anytime soon. It looked like we were headed in that direction there for a while. And on the plus side, once again, it's your commodities, especially energy related commodities and fertilizer related commodities. The gold stocks are not participating right now because of this very unusual increase in the U.S. dollar. I think exactly. You think that has to do with the ruble, the crash of the ruble, and the war and everything?
Well, I think it's a couple of things. Number one, you know, Japan, right, in terms of the little carry trade, right? I mean, you can borrow, you know, basically at zero, right, in Japan. You can turn that, you know, you buy U.S. treasuries, which those are dollar denominated, right? So it's not like you're buying the dollar, but theoretically, right, technically you are buying the dollar because you're buying a treasury. And so, you know, that interest rate differential, I mean, you know, look at all the yields in Europe, right? You know, you, at least the U.S. is where you know, at least the Fed has said, you know, we're in a rate rising environment, and everyone else is basically, you know, behind. The only ones that are, you know, you look at the countries that are raising rates, it's because they've had, you know, double digit inflation. I mean, you look at, you know, South America, you know, some of these South, I think it's Brazil, who's, you know, just continued to raise their rate, but they've had to. You know, and so and so you're not necessarily going to be buying a, you know, a ton of Brazilian debt, right? And so we, you know, we're kind of one of the only games in town. I think that's really what's doing it.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to continue to hold a little bit. I have a couple of gold stocks. I just think at 1800, that's kind of been the support level. I think the dollar is overdone on the upside, and I think gold is a little bit overdone on the downside. So we'll see. You know, all these things go through cycles. We see a week or two where oil prices are soft, but then it comes storming right back, and we're over $110. And so I'm going to pick on a few stocks here today. The first one I'm going to pick on is bore drilling. We've mentioned this several times. That's the chart of the day for me, B-O-R-R. It's breaking out to a new all-time high. It's in the drilling business. And those stocks are a little more volatile. Okay, they're not actually producers of oil. They're contractors to the producers. They've had some bad days, but for the most part, most of them are doing really well. Baker Hughes, Halliburton, different Transocean Offshore, Diamond Offshore. But Borr Drilling is one I've kind of been focused on because it's got that relative strength of 99. They don't make money yet. It's a smaller company, but the chart is off the charts right now. It's up 7% today to $5.23. The other one I like is DK. You would think this would be a dental stock, DK, but it's not. DK is Delek U.S. Holdings. They're in the refining business. And I noted today that Saudi Arabia is blaming the high oil price or the high gasoline prices on the middleman, the refineries. And they have a valid point there because we have not built any new refineries. There's a shortage of refineries around the world, especially here in the U.S., to convert the oil into gasoline. And so we have been, we continue to own several refinery stocks. Delek is one of them. DK, they're a smaller one, but they have that relative strength of 98. And it's up 4.2% today. And, of course, some of the bigger refineries are Valero and Marathon, and they're also doing very well today. Looking good from the charts. And then one other one here in that same oil business. Don't throw out the baby with the Tidewater. Tidewater, look at that thing. It's up 11.8% TDW. They provide offshore support vessels, marine support services to the rigs. And so that business is kind of booming too right now. TDW. So it's a very strong day, once again, in the energy patch. Oil over $110 per barrel today. And I'm also seeing a pretty strong day for UNG, which are natural gas prices. Well, you know, a lot of our listeners, I don't know, they may still be in the high tech and wondering why it's getting crushed so badly. Interest rates are going up, and so that's like the first thing to go. The second thing to go are bond funds, because in a rising interest rate environment, they don't do well. Rising interest rates, inflation, that continues to be a major theme on how to build your portfolio in 2022. This is completely different from 2020. And I know a lot of people don't realize, you know, how cyclical the market is. It's hard. You can't build. It's hard to build a portfolio. I mean, the best attempt that man has made at a buy and hold portfolio, all weather portfolio, was one of these asset allocations. But here you've got a year where stocks are under pressure and bonds are under pressure. So, you know, you're in a year where you'll lose less money than the overall market. But you're not going to do that well in an asset allocation. And when you have the big up years in the market, you lag behind big time. So anyways, give us a call at 855-611-BEST. We believe in a little bit of active management. Check out our newsletter. I really updated the macro forecast for this year and last week's newsletter at GundersonCapital.com. Have a great day, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Ameritrade. Ameritrade is a member of SIPC and FINRA.